Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up, we'll talk with Sioux Falls Argus Leader reporter Steve Young about a dark, troubling part of state history, the Hiawatha Asylum for Insane Indians. And we'll talk with the founders of the first Northern Voyage Film Festival in Brookings. But first, the North Dakota oil boom has been described as the gold rush of our times. It's dramatically changed the state over the past several years, and now a new assessment finds that the Bakken and Three Forks formations have more oil than previously thought. Journalist and North Dakota native Todd Melby has documented the changes around Williston, the center of the oil boom, for a multimedia project for Prairie Public Broadcasting called Black Gold Boom. He joins us on the line, and Todd, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Sure thing. Happy to be here.
And if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 800-524-3604. You can also email us at midday@sdpb.org. Well, Todd, the big question about the North Dakota oil boom has been, how long will it last? And I'm wondering if this new assessment from the U.S. Geological Survey provides any new answers or maybe an update to any answers.
Yeah, I think what the new survey really does is just confirm what oil producers already know, is that there's a lot more oil in the ground than the USGS originally thought. I mean, the original estimate from 2008, they said that there were 3.5 billion barrels, and they've doubled that now. They think there's about 7 billion barrels there.
And why the new assessment?
Well, the new assessment was because the North Dakota government leaders and business leaders thought that the old one was just too low, and they thought that they wouldn't get permanent investment in western North Dakota if there wasn't a new estimate that didn't accurately reflect how much oil was really in the ground. So Senator Hoeven and other folks just, you know, pushed the federal government into getting in there and making a new estimate. And these estimates are really based on what they think are recoverable amounts of oil. And so the technology, you know, the fracking and the horizontal drilling just got so good that it's improved that much since 2008, and hence the new estimate.
So is it more that the technology is allowing people to recover that oil, or that these are just deposits that they were unaware of before?
I think it's mostly the technology, because they use the word recoverable, and meaning can they get it out of the ground? And, you know, Continental Oil and other oil companies have proven that they can get it out of the ground in North Dakota, and that is, of course, fueling the boom in western North Dakota.
What have you been hearing from North Dakota regarding this news about this latest assessment?
Oh, they're really happy. I mean, Len Helms, who heads the North Dakota Oil and Gas Division, he even talked up the higher end of the estimate, and he thought it was accurate. And, of course, he said maybe it could be as much as $11 billion. Harold Hamm, who's the boss at Continental Oil in Oklahoma and one of the biggest players in the Bakken, he's now a multi-billionaire because of the boom. All along, he was throwing out the number $22-24 billion. It's not that high, but still, there's a lot of black gold in the ground.
Does this change anything about the way people living in North Dakota and the people that have invested in it, the people in the oil industry, does this change at all the way they're looking at the future or how far they're looking ahead?
That's a really good question. I think that's the multi-billion-dollar question that nobody knows the answer to, is basically how long is the boom going to last? How long can we count on all this stuff going on, and how much investment should there be in Williston and Watford City and Stanley and Tioga, et cetera? The Star Tribune, in its story about the boom and this new estimate, predicted, or actually they did the math, and they said now the boom will last 27 years. But that's assuming that oil prices remain high and that you know, the Bakken is still a good place to go for oil. This is a shale play, meaning that the oil's in the shale, and if it's in North Dakota, it's in a lot of other places around the world too. And so the question sort of becomes, how expensive is it in North Dakota versus other places around the world to get the oil?
You mentioned the oil market. Is that what will have or could have the biggest impact on the future of what happens in North Dakota?
Well, I think it's definitely a factor that a lot of people don't talk about. I mean, it is a world oil market, as any American who drives a car or pickup knows. You know, the price of gas hasn't really changed in America, even though there's this big find in North Dakota, and there's an equally big find in the Eagle Ford area of Texas. the price of gas and oil is determined on the world market. So if the world market, if the price of oil drops on the world market, one would think that, you know, the boom could go bust, possibly.
I mentioned the multimedia project that you've been producing for Prairie Public, Black Gold Boom. Is that still ongoing?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And are you in the Twin Cities? Are you in North Dakota?
I'm actually in the Twin Cities, though I'm yearning to go back to North Dakota. As you mentioned in your intro, I'm from North Dakota. I was born in Hettinger, graduated from high school in Hettinger, which is right along the North Dakota-South Dakota border. And it was great to be back there last year. I lived in Williston and a little bit in Bowbells, which is north of Stanley, and did lots of reporting in Williston and Watford City and thereabouts. And so I'm making plans to go back.
You use the word yearning. You're yearning to go back.
I miss North Dakota. You know, I've been living in the Twin Cities most of my adult life. That's, you know, 25 years or so. But it was great to be back, and it was great to be around Roughnecks. It was just a very exciting time.
Well, what was that like for you as you travel back, as you went back to the state that you grew up in? How much have things changed?
Well, there's a huge change between Hettinger, which is, I think, folks in western North Dakota, I'm sure, know this, that Hettinger's right along the South Dakota border, and the boom hasn't reached south of 94 or to the Hettinger, Bowman, New England area yet. And so when I drive from Williston to my sister's house in Hettinger, it's just a super peaceful drive once I leave the boom area. And it's like, you know, the prairie is just, you know, sort of, you know, as far as the eye can see, there's not much traffic. It's very calm. But when I go north of I-94, up around Watford and Williston, it's a totally different story. It's just truck after truck after truck and a very different North Dakota.
So the oil boom, at least physically here, hasn't affected the whole state. I mean, what, you know, you mentioned Hettinger. What about, you know, out east in Fargo? How does the oil boom affect people there?
Well, people in Bismarck tell me that the boom has affected Bismarck, but it's really on the periphery. They say that they see more trucks coming through town, and of course, lots of oil company headquarters are in Minot and Dickinson. Not their national or international headquarters, but some of, you know, their regional facilities for Baker Hughes and so forth. So I think, you know, Bismarck and Minot and Dickinson have definitely been affected, and I think Fargo has a little bit, but, you know, compared to the West, it's night and day.
Do you see that your hometown Hettinger will be affected in any way, or is it just too far south?
Well, it depends what the future holds. It depends if they start drilling south, and I'm not even sure the oil companies know that yet, though maybe they do. But of course, they wouldn't tell us. I think the big thing for small towns in western North Dakota and perhaps in western South Dakota will be, you know, how do we maintain the character of our towns in the midst of a possible boom? I mean, how can we have it both ways, or, you know, can we have it both ways? I think Watford City has really tried to do that. They've, you know, there's a bypass, so trucks can't go down Main Street, and they had a beautification of their Main Street before the boom, and I think they're really, really trying to sort of maintain their small-town quality while the boom's going on. I don't know if they've succeeded or not. I think they're probably varying opinions on that, but they seem to be trying.
Are there some places like Williston where that's just impossible to do?
I was just talking to my landlady from Williston yesterday, and she was... She was lamenting how much things had changed and how there's just more dust and more trucks and more development, and, you know, it's not the town she knew.
And what is the relationship of the locals, the people that grew up in places like Williston, to the people that are coming in to work in the oil fields?
I think it really depends. I think my experience has been in interviewing people and talking to people and observing is that young people adapt pretty easily. And they're the ones who are taking advantage of the opportunities. I'm talking about people in their 20s and 30s. You know, they're the ones who are physically able to do physical oil field work. So, you know, guys that right out of high school can go get a job that pays $80,000, $100,000, $120,000 a year. You know, they can be truckers, they can work on rigs, they can work in production rigs, and they can just go. And then, you know, same thing with entrepreneurs. I mean, if you've got that skill and you can, you know, create a business that will likely be profitable. But for people who are maybe in their 40s, 50s, 60s and above, you know, it's not the North Dakota that they knew, and they're kind of settled into their ways, and a lot of them don't like it.
Who are the people who are coming to North Dakota to work in the oil fields? You use the word roughnecks. Are these all tough guys?
Well, roughnecks is kind of colloquial for just guys who work in a drilling rig.
Uh-huh.
They've got, you know, the name roughneck probably because they, you know, it's a strong physical job.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they come from all over. I mean, I met people from Massachusetts, Wyoming, you know, Texas, California, Illinois, Michigan, all over America.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and we're talking with Todd Melby, producer of the multimedia series Black Gold Boom for Prairie Public Broadcasting. You can find his stories online at blackgoldboom.com. And Todd, I'm wondering, as a reporter, was it difficult talking with people, or were people more than happy to share their stories with you?
I always enjoy talking to people. And, you know, there are guys in pickups who look kind of tough, and maybe, you know, you might pause before you talk to them. But, you know, I found that 9 times out of 10 people want to talk. And I think one of the reasons they wanted to talk for this particular story is that, like, they're part of history. They really see this as a historic thing. It's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's very likely a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And they want to share their story often. They want to, you know, talk about what they're doing and what their experience has been. And the other thing is, most people are away from home, so they're probably lonely, and they're maybe more willing to talk to a guy with a microphone.
You mentioned loneliness. How many women are there out there, and how many are working side by side in the oil fields?
Well, they're definitely a minority in the oil fields. Though they're, you know, colloquially, it seems like there are more women working. I've heard people say that there are more women truckers than there used to be. I have never seen a woman on a drilling rig, but I've only been on a few rigs. But it's definitely a male-dominated atmosphere.
On Marketplace last week, you had a piece on how women are treated in this area full of men working the oil camps. Is this an aspect that you think has been properly covered?
I'm not sure, but, you know, I tried to do my part and cover it a bit. I think that the story that you're referring to talks about it's a woman who was working at a coffee shop in Watford City. She was young, 21, 22 years old, and she told a photographer and video producer that I was working with that that the men are like packs of wolves, that they're always just hitting on her, and everywhere she goes out for a run, she gets, you know, catcalled, she gets hollered, you know, it's just lots and lots of sexual harassment. And some people have said that, you know, that's isolated, it's really not like that, but, you know, there was a woman who wrote into the Watford City newspaper, the McKenzie County Farmer. You know, she was a mom, and she talked about how, you know, she was pushing her kids down the sidewalk, and the kids were in a stroller, and, you know, she got catcalled by, you know, guys in a truck. So I don't think it's an isolated incident. It's happening.
So is it a dangerous place for women to be?
I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, mm-hmm. The statistics show that there's an increase in crime, and there's an increase in violent crime, and, you know, there are rapes in counties where there haven't been rapes before, but it's still a pretty low number, I guess. I don't know exactly how to answer that one.
Well, as men are looking for companionship, dogs, are there dogs or other pets around?
Oh, yeah. You see, you know, dogs in pickups, dogs in the back of pickups. Sure, yeah. You know, there are guys just who hang out together. You know, there was a great photo in the New York Times. They've done occasional stories on the boom, and they showed a guy dancing alone on a dance floor. I think he was in Williston, and you know, he just didn't have anybody to dance with, so out he went.
So how does that affect the men there, or at least the way that they behave, or the way they respond to the people that they're working with, the lack of women around?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things we did, we talked to, you know, guys working on a drilling rig, and, you know, they're a team, so, you know, they end up, you know, bunking in the same man camps, and they work together, and they have, you know, the only time they're away from each other is during their days off. And so one guy said, you know, that they're really like a family, that they, you know, look out for each other. So I think that, you know, if you have that experience where you're working with the same group of people, know, for week after week after week, you really do develop that sense of family and togetherness. So that would be your de facto family.
Did a lot of the men working up in North Dakota on the oil fields, from what I understand, a lot of them have family elsewhere, and since there's so much money to be made that they work there and oftentimes will go back home for a certain length of time to...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would, I mixed it up. Sometimes I drove from Williston to Minneapolis to see my wife, and sometimes I took the train. And, taking that train back to Williston, there was a whole bunch of guys who were doing the same thing, and they were coming from Minneapolis, or they were coming from... I talked to one guy who'd actually come all the way from Michigan, so he had to change trains in Chicago to get out to Williston, and it wasn't unusual at all to see just guys on that train, and I know for a fact that's one of the stories I did, that ridership on Amtrak is way up because of the boom.
What's been the most surprising thing that you've discovered since you've been reporting on the North Dakota oil boom?
Well, the first thing I think that surprised me and that really surprises everybody is the traffic. It's just nonstop, and there are just so many trucks. It's like a big city traffic jam, except it's on a tiny two-lane highway in western North Dakota. I mean, anybody who's driven those two-lane highways in South Dakota knows that they're not often bumper to bumper, but it's just crazy to see just big rig after big rig after big rig. So that's a big surprise. And it's also a bit of a surprise to talk to guys who are, in their early 20s and making just huge amounts of money. I mean, they're making double and triple what I make. They're pulling in $120,000, $140,000, $160,000, and they just, they're making it faster than they can spend it.
What does it take to really survive, or maybe that's not the right word, but to thrive or to be successful, to live this life, to work on in the oil industry in North Dakota?
And when I mention these big dollar amounts that people are making those big dollar amounts because of the willingness to work overtime. Mm-hmm. There is no 40-hour work week. It's at least 60, probably 80, 100 hours a week, and sometimes more. So it takes a willingness to just work and work and work. And there's not much entertainment in western North Dakota, if you're from a big city. So that's, and you're away from your family. So that's pretty much what you do, is work and sleep.
How fully involved are you in this life? As you're reporting, you mentioned you're taking the train back to your family or visiting your family, which is something that a lot of the workers go through. You're there in Williston living. Are you really, you're among the people that telling stories about?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not on the drilling rig and I'm not driving a truck, but mm-hmm. I'm out there and I'm seeing people, and it's sort of similar because I also felt really alone. And you say that I'm associated with Prairie Public, which of course I am, and I'm happy to be, but their studios are in Fargo, Grand Forks, and Bismarck. So the closest studio is 4 hours away from me in Williston. So I had no colleagues, and I produced my radio stories in the basement of a house, but I was standing in line at Walmart with everybody else, and struggling through with the traffic and eating at little food trucks, and yeah, all of that.
And it's still, you're yearning to go back.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah. When do you think you'll be going back to do more stories?
This summer, for sure.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of the people wanted to talk to you because they saw this as a historical time, once-in-a-lifetime situation in North Dakota. From a perspective, do you have any regarding how this oil boom in North Dakota compares to other oil booms in history in the U.S.?
I know that the Eagle Ford oil boom that's in southern Texas right now is bigger as far as... the amount of oil that they're getting out of the ground. And I'm guessing it just hasn't gotten the media coverage, as much as North Dakota has, because it's, everybody thinks of Texas and oil, but nobody thinks of North Dakota and oil. But, I think it is historic because it's potentially a point in time that says that the U.S. is on the road to energy independence. We're not there yet, but this could be, the beginning of that. And it's also important because, you know, we're coming out of like the worst recession since the Great Depression. I mean, it's really, really bad elsewhere in America for jobs. And you can see that because people are willing to leave their families. They're willing to live three guys in a trailer without running water in order to work these jobs. And you know, people sort of say it's the gold rush, but I also think it's kind of grapes of wrath. I mean, it's some people are that desperate where they need to come and try to find work because there's no work where they are.
Well, Todd, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Yep, you're welcome.
That's reporter Todd Melby. He's the producer of Prairie Public's multimedia series, Black Gold Boom, How Oil Changed North Dakota. To check out stories from this series, you can visit blackgoldboom.com. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with Sioux Falls Argus Leader reporter Steve Young about a dark, troubling part of state history, the Hiawatha Asylum for Insane Indians. And later this hour, the founders of the first Northern Voyage Film Festival in Brookings join the program.